Please join me tonight in welcoming our speaker tonight, Frank Jones from Sherman Oaks, California.
I'm Frank Jones. I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be here. It's good to be sober. If Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work, you'd have somebody else standing up here tonight. You almost did anyway. So I want to thank Carl for asking me to come and participate. And I'm going to say this, and then I know somebody's going to do it anyway. After the meeting, don't come up and hit me on my left arm, okay? I have 40 stitches in it. I had surgery. And I'm supposed to be wearing this big apparatus, but I didn't want to hassle with security at the airport. So I'd appreciate it if you didn't come up and bang me on the side of the arm. I'm going to pick three or four of the biggest guys in the meeting and have them hang out with me, okay? But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I enjoyed the dinner tonight, and it's good to see some folks I've seen before, and it's good to be here. And I got to tell you that if you want proof that AA works, you don't even have to listen to me. The last two people that took the 43-year chips, hell, they got sober together. They're married to each other, and they haven't killed each other. That tells me AA works. Jesus. That's pretty astonishing. I can't believe that. But that's pretty cool. That does. That's a testament to Alcoholics Anonymous is what that is. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Before I got up here, they read me all the stuff I can't do. They told me I can't cuss. I can't talk about drugs or sex or food. Just makes me crazy. My talk's about over. I told the young lady, I'm not a dope fiend. I've never even smoked a marijuana cigarette. I didn't use drugs. I think drug users are scum, so that's... I mean, think about it. I mean, I'm not picking on the dope fiends in it. I've always wanted to stand at the podium and sound macho and say, I'm Frank Jones and I'm a dope fiend. I'm a crack monster, you know. Jesus. It doesn't take any talent to be a dope fiend, folks. I just want to tell you that right now. It doesn't take any talent. Anybody that shoots a narcotic into their system, they will become addicted to it. I don't know any social heroin users. I don't know any social coke snorters. But if you're going to be an alcoholic, I got to tell you, you got to hang in. You can't drink one beer, shot of whiskey, and come into Alcoholics Anonymous. It don't work that way. If you're going to be an alcoholic, you've got to be able to start drinking at whatever age. And then in a very short time, you're spending all your money on the alcohol. You ain't paying your bills. You ain't doing nothing that's responsible. You're hanging out in the bars. You're hanging out with us seedy people. You know, you're wetting your pants in the bar, coming out of the bathroom thinking you look like a champ. You're parking your car on the lawn and you're going to jail and nut houses and abusing the wife. You're doing that crap one day at a time for years to get here. So you can't just drink one beer and get here. You got to hang in and have a lot of willpower to be an alcoholic. So I hung in. I think that's important. You know, I have no reason for being an alcoholic. I mean, look at me. I don't look like an alcoholic. I mean, look at the folks sitting next to you. Few folks look like alcoholics. This is a group picture right here. I'm going to tell you that from where I'm standing. You look like alcoholics. Because I was raised with good parents. My parents didn't abuse me. They didn't lock me up in a bathroom. They didn't molest me. They didn't do anything. They didn't. What they did is provided a good home for me and my two brothers to grow up in. What they did is provided an example for us kids to grow up and live the right way and do the right thing. My dad worked on the railroad, and he worked on that railroad for over 45 years. He was married to my mom 50 years. And that's not why I'm an alcoholic. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I did that inventory. I read that thing to my sponsor and then we talked about my defects of character and shortcomings. I had to look back at some things. Now, I'm not one of those folks that carry a teddy bear in a backpack looking for attention, you know. I'm not searching for an inner child, all right? I'm almost 65-year-old, and I haven't grown up yet, for God's sakes. I'm still an immature snot. But I got to tell you, looking back on my childhood, I grew up being a thief. My mom and dad never taught me to steal. I picked it up on my own. It's just easier to steal than it is to stand in line and pay for something. And when you leave the store, you got the item and you got your money. You're a double winner. And I don't know who taught me that. I just picked it up. And then I lied all the time. I'm a liar. And my parents never taught me to lie. But when you tell the truth, it's just out there. And you can't change the truth. And then when you're a liar, you can be anything you want to be. And I've always wanted to be everything but me. And I've been a truck driver, and I've drove 18-wheelers across country, and I've been an airline pilot. I've been a dentist. I've been a gynecologist. I mean, think about it. You can be anything you want to be when you're a liar. So I lied all the time. And then I cheated. I don't want to work hard and earn anything. I don't want to work. Give me, lend me, can I have, let me borrow, let me copy, do for me. You know, I'm lazy, I'm self-centered, and I just cheated all the time at everything I did. I wasn't taught that, and I don't know where I got it from. It's just the easier, softer way for somebody like me. And that's not why I'm an alcoholic. I grew up in the Midwest in Danville, Illinois, and I had that great childhood, but I had things I couldn't tell anybody. I was afraid of the dark. Now, I know you dudes up here in Portland, you're not afraid of the dark. I was afraid of the dark, for God's sakes. I couldn't tell anybody about that. I was ashamed of that. I was a big athlete. I won 9 varsity letters. I had scholarships to go to college and play basketball. I ain't supposed to be afraid of the dark, so I was ashamed of that. I wanted to be a macho guy. There's some macho guys here. I've seen you already. I used to wear glasses, and I'm tall, and I'm skinny, and I felt like a wimp and a wussy, and I'm afraid of the dark, and I was ashamed of that. I couldn't tell anybody about that. That's how I felt before I ever took a drink of alcohol. I don't know where those feelings came from. My first drink, I was at a party in Danville. It was a hot summer night. All the guys from the ball team were there, and we had our girlfriends with us. And my girlfriend brought me over this big iced tea glass full of slow gin and 7-Up. I didn't know what slow gin was. I'd never heard of it. But it's red and it had ice in it and it looked like strawberry Kool-Aid. Well, that's my drink of choice, strawberry Kool-Aid. I love that stuff. So I took a drink of it and it tasted like strawberry Kool-Aid. So I chugged that glass of slow gin and 7-Up. And nothing happened. It was no big deal. Give me another one, would you please? And she brought another one, and I drank that one down. And, you know, I didn't throw an old wrinkled trench coat on and get a bottle of wine, throw it in a paper bag, and shoot to Skid Row. I didn't go up to the guy and say, hey, I want to be an alcoholic someday, speaking in Portland, for God's sakes. How do I become an alcoholic? But I wasn't doing that. I didn't get knee-walking, commode-hugging drunk. I kept drinking those things. And I wasn't drinking for the taste or the effect or what alcohol was doing to me or for me or any of the things I've heard at the podium. I was drinking for one reason. All my buddies are drinking. I'm drinking because all my friends are drinking. And I want to be like my friends. I want to have that camaraderie and that fraternity and that brotherhood that you have. You know, I want to be a part of that stuff. And so I'm drinking and they're hugging and munching their girlfriends in the corner and dancing and laughing. And I can't do that. I'm self-centered. You know, I don't want to. If I ask you to dance, you'll say no. I'm going to feel bad. And then I don't know how to dance anyway. You know, and if I talk to you, you're going to think I'm stupid. So I thought if I drank like my buddies are drinking, I could do the things my buddies are doing. That's why I drank that night. I didn't drink because I'm a macho tough guy. I drank because my buddies are drinking. I drank almost a gallon of slow gin in 30 minutes. I kept drinking glass after glass. Nothing happened. About 20 minutes after I drank that last glass, I found out where slow gin got its name. I got drunk as hell. I went into a blackout. They took me home. They dropped me off. And I passed out. The next morning when I come to, I'm puking up everything I had eaten, drank at the party that night. I'm sicker than a dog. My head's pounding. My stomach's upset. And I don't remember how I got home. I have no recollection of how I got home that night. And I didn't equate that to anything. I thought everybody that was at that party experienced what I did. I didn't know what a blackout was till I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and the old timers in my home group snapped me up and they said, Slim, a blackout is when you consume alcohol, you go out and do whatever it is you're going to do that night. And the next morning you'll have amnesia about all or parts of that night. That's an indication you've got a problem drinking. Normal drinkers don't have blackouts. I didn't know that. I found that out in AA. I drank in blackouts from the first time I drank. I missed 3 days of school with a terrible hangover. I went back to school and the guys told me about that night because I didn't remember it. They told me I was dancing, I was laughing funny. And some guy said something and I punched his ticket. And when those guys told me about that night, what I felt as a part of those guys, I felt like I'd had a great time. I didn't remember it, but I had a great time. It sounded like I did. And I liked the recognition I got. I liked feeling a part of those guys. And I didn't turn into a blazing alcoholic after that and get the shakes and study all when I didn't drink. I drank when I could get it, and it was on weekends. And when I drank, I got drunk. When I got drunk, I got in fights because I'm full of fear. I didn't know that back then. The only way to keep you away from me is when I'm afraid is to be a fighter. So I'm a fighter. And I started getting in trouble. And in 2 weeks before I'm supposed to graduate from high school, I have a scholarship to play basketball at this university. And now I have a committee in my head that talks to me. And my committee is telling me, what if you go to college, Frank, and you don't make the team? You're going to look bad. What if you go to college and you don't get grades good enough to even stay on that team? Those things fill me with fear. I didn't know that back then. I didn't know that. And so I had to make a keen alcoholic decision. I quit high school. It makes sense. Think about it. You can't go to college on a scholarship if you don't graduate from high school. So I quit. I don't have to face the fear. So I quit high school. Now I'm drinking with the guys about 2 weeks later, and I know I had another keen alcoholic thought. I'm a macho guy. I'm tough. I know I'm a macho guy. So I went and joined the Marine Corps. If you're a wimp and a wussy and afraid of the dark, don't go in the Marine Corps. Join the Air Force. Go in the Navy. Doesn't matter. If I haven't alienated you yet, I will before I'm done. I joined the Marine Corps. I'm on a train going up to Chicago to get sworn in. I'm full of fear. I'm homesick and lonely, and the train ain't even moved yet. I can't tell the other guys that are going into service with me about that fear and that feeling I have of being a wimp and a wussy. I hate that. I'm sitting next to a guy with a ducktail haircut and long sideburns. He's wearing a black leather jacket with chains and zippers all over it. He's a macho guy. He's going into the Marine Corps. I want to hang out with him in Chicago. He asked me if I want to drink this stuff he's drinking out of this little brown bottle. And I said, yeah, I'll take a hit off of that. I took that bottle, I turned it up, and I drank 3 or 4 big mouthfuls of it. I don't know how you drank whiskey at the age of 17. But I'll tell you what I did. I sprayed that crap all over the seats in front of me. I had whiskey coming out my nose, my eyes are watering, I can't breathe. This guy's looking at me funny. I feel like a wimp sitting there. I feel like a wimp. I hate that. I wiped off my face. I handed him the bottle, and I said, you know, that's pretty good. He said, you want another drink? I said, shit, I can't breathe. I'm having a hard time. I drank to fit in and be a part of. That's why I drank. I drank to fit in and be a part of. I got sworn in Chicago. They flew me out to Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego. I went through boot camp scared and homesick. I can't tell anybody about that. I'm ashamed of that. I was there with a bunch of guys older than me. They're 19, 20-year-old. They didn't look afraid like I was afraid. And I'm comparing how I feel to how they look. That ain't valid. I didn't know that back then. I learned to put a facade out there. I learned to act like what I thought a man should act like to struggle and get through boot camp, and I did. I was at Camp Pendleton in the 5th Marines there, and the Cuban crisis happened, and we went down the coast in a convoy through the Panama Canal to Cuba, and I'm afraid. I can't tell anybody about that fear. I'm a Marine. I'm going to war. That's what we do, and I'm afraid, and I'm ashamed of that. Nothing happened down there in Cuba. I'm starting to think about these feelings. Maybe I am a wimp, and then we go over to the Far East for 13 months. First night there, we unpack our gear, and a guy says, hey, Frank, we're going out in the Ville and get drunk. Now, I don't know how many of you have been out in the Ville. The Ville is cool. I got invited to the Ville with the guys. I'm going with them to the Ville. We go out in the Ville. We pooled our money and we bought a Typhoon 5th of sake. It holds about 2 gallons. Cost us about 75 cents. They're passing that bottle of sake around and they're drinking it. They're doing that male bonding thing that macho guys do. They're punching each other. They're hugging and stuff. They're doing knuckle push-ups in the gravel and they're ooh-rahing and you know, I feel like a man standing there with those guys, man. That's cool. And that bottle got to me, and I chug-lugged 3 or 4 big mouthfuls of it. Now, I don't know how you drank sake at the age of 17. I sprayed that crap all over their shoes. And they started laughing and pointing at me and making fun of me, and I hate that feeling. I hate being made fun of. I hate feeling like a wimp and a kid. And I drank some more and I puked it up, and that bottle come around again, and I drank some more and I puked it up, and I learned something that night in Okinawa. If you're going to be an alcoholic, you can't let looking bad bother you. You've got to hang in, baby. You have got to hang in. And we hung in, didn't we? You know, I hung in. I think that's important. You know, and that bottle come around, I kept drinking and puking up, and I finally held enough of that sake down, and something funny happened. And I don't know what alcohol did for you, but I'll tell you what alcohol did for me every doggone time I drank it. I looked at those five or six Marines I was drinking with, and I realized something. These guys are punks. Why am I hanging out with these sissies? You see, when I drink, I don't need nobody. I don't need to be entertained by you when I'm drinking. I could do that myself. I don't need you. I become an army of one when I'm drinking. And I left those guys. I don't need them. And I went out drinking by myself. And I went in another bar where a Marine and I were shooting pool, and he said something that evidently offended me. And I hit him in the face with a pool cue. Now, I seen it in the movies. It looked cool. But he's laying there bleeding on the floor, and they're calling the military police. I don't want to go to the brig. I'm 17-year-old. I don't want to get locked up. I'm full of fear now. I feel that guilt and that shame you feel when you know you shouldn't have done that. I knew what I did was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. And I left out of that bar, and I run down through the alleys in Anoka, and I went to another bar, and I sit in there, and I ordered a shooter, and I drank it. And I drank a beer, and I ordered another shooter, and I drank that. And the more of that stuff I put away that night, something funny happened. I really didn't worry about going to the brig no more. I figured if the MPs walked in that bar, they're not going to take me alive. I'm fighting it out with them. That's what alcohol did for me. I didn't care about responsibility or picking a tab up. I didn't care about doing the right thing. I didn't care about my actions when I drank. And I started to brag to the Marine sitting next to me about hitting that guy with a pool cue. And then I looked down at the end of the bar, and there's a Nason sitting down there. Now, I'm a sucker for a pretty face. Women have been able to soak me for every dime I've got my entire life. It's another whole 12-step program. I can't talk about it. This is AA. But she slid up next to me, and she asked me to buy her a drink. And so, being a nice guy, I bought the young lady a drink. And then she started telling me this sad story about her mom that needed surgery. It broke my heart. I have a soft heart. It just broke my heart. And so I gave her some more money. And her and I trudged the road of happy destiny to her hooch. I'd like to stand here tonight and tell you we had such a great time. She remembers it to this day. Okay, I'm macho. It was over too quick for me to remember it. And then I was embarrassed, and I felt like a wimp and a wussy, and I hate that feeling. I hate feeling like a wimp. And when she went to clean up, I stole my money out of her headboard and set her house on fire. It just made sense to me at the time. And I split from there, and I went back to the base, and I passed out, and at reveille the next morning I come to, and I'm puking up everything I had eaten drinking the Ville that night, and I'm sicker than a dog, and my head's pounding. I have no recollection of what happened out in town. I don't remember anything that happened out in the Ville. I have no knowledge of what happened. I'm in the head throwing up, and the guys come up, and they tell me the MPs are looking for who hit that guy. And that guilt and that shame comes back because I'm sober. And I feel the feelings you feel when you know you've really messed up and you're in a lot of trouble. And then they told me about the fire in the Ville. Now, my father hadn't raised me to act that way. He was married to my mom 50 years, and I never heard my dad raise his voice to my mother. I don't know where those actions came from. I was ashamed of that. I did not know how I was going to make that right. And I found out a secret that morning in Okinawa. I went to my locker and I opened it up, and there's a bottle in there with a big red dot on it, and that's called Akadama wine. I took that bottle of wine down and screwed the cap, and I chug-lugged some of it, and I didn't throw it up. I drank some more of that wine and went out to formation. By the time that formation was over and I walked back in that barracks, something funny had happened. My headache was gone. My stomach settled down. I wasn't sick no more. I don't know what that tells you, but what that tells me is if I have a couple of drinks in the morning, I don't have to be sick. I don't have to have a hangover. I went back to that locker, got that bottle of wine out, poured some in a canteen cup, walked around drinking it, and 20 minutes later, I start bragging about hitting that guy with a pool cue. I start bragging about setting that woman's house on fire. You see, when I'm drinking, everything I do is cute. When I'm drinking, everything I do is okay. You see, I don't do anything that my head hasn't convinced me it's okay to do. And when I'm drinking, I don't care about responsibility. When I'm drinking, I don't care about paying my bills on time. When I'm drinking, I don't care about fidelity with my wife or my girlfriend. When I'm drinking, I don't care about lying, cheating, and stealing. When I'm drinking, I don't care whose feelings I hurt or whose life I walk through. What I care about when I'm drinking is me. I am the mighty I am consumed with self-obsession. Now, I didn't know that. And I became a morning drinker and a daily drinker at the age of 17. All my money went on booze and women in the bars, and I became a bar fighter. And I'm too light to fight, too thin to win, and I developed the technique of ambush. And the Marine Corps really does frown on those actions, contrary to popular belief. And I made a stripe, and they took it away from me. And then they restricted me to the base that I was on. And then they restricted me to the barracks I was in. And if you'd have walked up to me over any time and told me, you know what your problem is, Frank? It's drinking. Every time you drink, you get in trouble. Every time you drink, you do something you shouldn't do. Every time you drink, you break the rules. I could have stood there and looked you in the eye and give you reason after reason why drinking had nothing to do with it. This is the only disease in the world that will kill you in your head. We'll always blame something else. All my problems is this. All my problems is that. It's their fault. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the old timers, they snap me up and they said, you want to see what the problem is, Slim? Go look in the mirror. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, those 12 steps are made for you to work, not the people around you. But when I got here, I blamed everybody. I blamed my wife, the kids, the job, the police. I blamed all my problems. I was a victim when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know about you. But I'd never had a break. It was them. It was that. It was the boss. They don't understand me. This is the only disease that'll kill you, and your head says it's always something else. My head will always blame something else. I ended up getting in a lot of trouble over there. I perceived the cab drivers had their little meters fixed in their cabs and they were ripping us servicemen off. That irritated me. And so I decided to get my money back one night, and the cab driver fought back and I beat his face in with a rock. That man almost died. They put me in the brig. I was 18 years old. My father flew from the States to Okinawa. He met with the commanding general. He paid for that guy's surgery. He paid for his retirement. He gave that cab company some money over. Brought letters from home. They just begged the Marine Corps not to throw me out. It's the only thing I knew how to do. I'm 18. It isn't the way it is today. And some deal was cut somewhere and that they were going to send me back to duty. And by the time that paperwork went through after my court-martial, I'd spent 337 days locked up in that brig over there. If you'd have walked up to me and blamed alcohol on that, I'd have told you alcohol ain't going to do with this. It's these people over here. It's those cab drivers ripping us servicemen off and these women in the bars and it's this and it's that. And it's not me. I'm a victim. I'm just getting back what was mine. And I was convinced of that until I did that inventory and read that to my sponsor and started talking about me and my attitude and my actions. And today I found out that I am responsible. I got out of that brig and they sent me to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and I went down there and I went through Illinois on my way and I met a girl out of high school and married her. She wants me to stay home and be a husband, and I'm a bar drinker. I don't know about you, but I like the intelligent guys and the beautiful women in the bars. And I don't know how you'd get out of the house, but I'll tell you how I'd get out of the house. I'd start a fight with that woman and make it look like it's her fault. Now we're standing there yelling and screaming at each other because we're both drinking and we're having that cuss fight that alcoholics have. And I can't drink in a noisy place. So that gives me my reason to get the hell out of that house. And now I'm out in the bars drinking. And now some guy will say something there to me in Jacksonville and I'll hit him with a bottle or one of those glass ashtrays. And they'll call the Jacksonville police and I'll leave that bar and I'll go down. I'll go in another bar and I'm sitting in there and I'm drinking and I'm cool and I'm macho and I know that. And I lock eyes with some honey because I got to be validated. You see, guys like me don't feel like a man unless they're validated by something. And what I got to do is I lock eyes with some honey and then her and I trudge the road of happy destiny to her place. And then we do what we got to do and then I'm starting to sober up and I'm starting to think, and you should never drink and think. That's a bad deal. And I start thinking about that woman at home, and what I realize when I'm sobering up, you see, it ain't her, it's me. What I'm feeling is the feelings you're going to feel when you're a liar. What I'm going to feel are the feelings you feel when you're unfaithful and you're a cheat. And I can't go home and look at that woman now. And I stop in a bar and I have a couple of shooters and a beer. And what my head says now is this is a guy thing. This is what guys do. This is macho. Don't worry about it. And I go home and I walk in that house and she says, where have you been? Now, I hate that question. Now I got to lie to her. I wouldn't be a liar if she hadn't asked that question. So it ain't my fault I'm lying to her. It's her fault for asking that question. And then we have that cuss fight again. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the old-timers in my home group advise me that those 12 steps in that big book are made for me to work, not my wife. It's none of my business what my wife does or says. My sponsor told me that what my wife cooks for dinner is none of my business. He said, if you don't like what your wife cooks for dinner, cook your own dinner and keep your mouth shut about it. She evidently likes what she cooked. If you don't like how that house looks, Frank, you clean that house yourself. But never say anything to that woman about it because she's evidently happy with it. You're the one that's unhappy, so clean the house yourself the way you want it. I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous how to be a husband. I didn't have a clue. I thought I had to be the boss. Ain't that what macho guys are? They're the boss of their castle. I had to learn here that a relationship is two people giving and taking. I had to learn here that I had to treat her the way I wanted to be treated. I didn't know that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Then we had a kid. I don't know how to treat kids. Kids cry. They make messes. They break things. They spill things. They crap in their diapers. I mean, what the hell's up with that? No human should do that, but a drunk maybe. And I'd shake her and I'd throw her in that crib and she's crying and then the wife starts on me. And we're having a cuss fight and I'm feeling that guilt and that shame you feel when you know you're a bad father. And the only thing that takes those kind of feelings away is a couple of shots of whiskey and a beer. Then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and what I found out is kids are little people. But that's what kids do when they grow up. They make messes. They break things. They spill things. They do that. I was told by my sponsor and the old-timers in my home group to lower my voice in that house. They don't need a drill sergeant at home. They need a father. I had to learn to clean my language up at home. I didn't learn it here by somebody reading it to me in your format. I had a sponsor that told me to quit talking that way around women and children. I hear guys today and the young women in AA firing off the F word and everything, and I stand there and admire them and think how intelligent they are. Really makes them sound like they're macho. I found out from my sponsor that talking that way just makes you a mental midget trying to express himself forcibly. I had to learn here to clean my language up. I had to learn here how to act like a man, a real man, not what I thought a man was. I had to learn that that's what kids do when they grow up, and I had to lower my voice. My sponsor told me the only time you touch those children is when you're going to put your arms around them and give them a hug. I had to learn in AA how to be a father. I was ashamed of that for a long time. I had to learn here how to be a dad. I didn't know how to be a dad. I learned to be a dad watching the dads in AA. I learned to be a father watching the dads with their kids and their moms with their kids in AA. Because I didn't know how to be a dad. I had my perception and it was totally wrong, as usual. Then I went into the CO's office one day and they issued me a rifle with a telescope on it, live ammunition. Sent me across the ocean to a place called Vietnam. Vietnam's not my problem. It's never been my problem. My problem is standing in the middle of my wardrobe tonight. When I got over, I'm full of fear. I'm a sniper. I'm up at Quezon and Cantien. It's 1967, 1968. I can't tell anybody about the feelings I'm having. I'm ashamed of those. I'm supposed to be a macho, tough guy. And I found out a secret in Vietnam. 151 proof rum. You put that in your canteens, you drink that, you become bulletproof and invisible. Now what I can do because of that is I can go out on those patrols with those guys and do the things I think I have to do to show everybody how tough I am. And I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people. I'm not proud of that. That's where alcohol allows me to go. I don't know where it allows you to go. But I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is I can't change those things. I can't undo the things in my past. What I can do today is try to stay sober and be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got right now, and if I can put enough right nows together, I'm going to have a sober tonight. That's all I'm going to have. I can never put enough right nows together to go back in my past and change the things I've done. I can't close the door on that. I need to leave that door open so I can look back and see what I'm like when I drink, what alcohol allows me to do, and the excuses I'm allowed to give for my actions. So what alcohol did for me in Vietnam is save my sanity. I got blown up over during the siege at Quezon. I got wounded. I come back to the States. Get out of the hospital. I went home while I was there. We'd had a son born to us while I was there. And my daughter's growing up, and my wife wants me to stay home, and we're drinking. We're having a cuss fight. You see, I want to get out in the bars and talk about the war. You see, Vietnam vets, That's our only claim to fame, for God's sake. So we got to get out there and rap about it. I didn't want to miss any of the action. And so we're having a cuss fight. And we're yelling and screaming at each other again and cussing. And I finally told that woman, shut up or I'll kill you. She don't believe me. So I walk in the closet and I got a gun out I had left home for her. And I walk back in that kitchen. And my daughter's standing between my legs, pulling on my pants, telling me, don't shoot her, Mommy. And I'm trying to get the safety off that gun. And we're yelling and screaming. And she ain't shutting up. And I hit a pin at the base of the receiver, and I pushed that pin in, and it was a firing pin, and that gun went off. And that bullet went through my hand and down between my legs where my daughter was standing. Bullet didn't hit her. I'm a blessed man for that. I could have accidentally shot and killed my daughter that day in a drunken rage because my wife ain't doing what I'm trying to tell her to do, because I am the mighty I am. I am the boss. You see, I have to be the boss. Shortly after that, she divorced me. I couldn't believe it. I fired one shot. I shot myself, and she split with the kids. You see, alcohol tells me I'm a good father. Alcohol tells me I'm a good husband. I don't know what alcohol tells you. I drank over that. I became a drill instructor in San Diego, training new recruits. I abused them and hazed them, fought in the bars down there, carried a gun. 2.5 years down in San Diego, I had a keen alcoholic thought because I'm a tough guy. I volunteered and went back to Vietnam for a second tour. I was in the infantry this time, and I was there in 70, 71, and all I did is repeat my bad actions from the first time, and again, alcohol saved my sanity. I got shot up in an ambush over this time. I come back to the States, and the Marine Corps wants me to come back after lunch. I can't do that now. I have to drink now because there's demons. There's things I see that you ain't seeing. There's things telling me things that ain't telling other people things. And I got to drink. So after 11 years active duty in the Marine Corps, I got out of the Marine Corps. And I became a police officer in Southern California. You think that's funny? Freeze. I'll take you down, mister. I can't tell my partner in the police car I'm afraid of the dark. I can't tell my partner in the police car that when we go down those alleys and dark places that there's demons down there. So before I go to work, I drink, and it takes that fear away. It washes fear away for me. Now when I go to work, what happens when you scare me on the street? I get violent. I was a violent police officer in the city I worked in. I'm not proud of that. That's just where alcohol allows me to go. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous today, I go in the institutions there in Southern California and I speak. And I tell those guys what I used to be like and what I'm trying to be like today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to tell you, I'm not a wonderful human being. You can't tell that I'm still intense, but I am. For God's sakes, I only got 27 years and 8 months sober. I'm not well yet. But I hear old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous talk, and when I was new, I used to listen to them, and I thought, I'll never get there. I mean, they were wonderful. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen an old-timer float about 6 inches off the floor when they walk, but they're walking hand in hand with God. I mean, I've seen them. They're never late to work. They don't yell at their kids. They don't have impure thoughts. They don't have greed or lust. They're wonderful. And I thought, well, the way my crazy head is, I can't be like them. And then my sponsor told me I don't have to be. My sponsor told me I needed to find out who I was. And I needed to accept who I was and start working on changing. I had to change me, not the people around me. I don't care what the people around me do. And I'm not a nice guy today. I'm over 27 years, 9 months sober. I'm not a good husband. I'm not a good father. I'm not a good man. What I try to be today is a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is my only salvation. Alcoholics Anonymous, it keeps my head quiet. Allows me to live outside these rooms in a world I have a hard time living in. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to do that. I'm a better father, husband, and man today than I was 27 years ago. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be a little bit better than I was today. But I can't guarantee that. I make a lot of amends to a lot of people. I judge people. I'm abrasive. I'm critical. That's just how it is. Ask my home group. Of course, 90% of them, my sponsor said they all ain't going to like you. Says, as a matter of fact, most of them ain't going to like you, so live with it. And so I do. But I'm just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I am. I love this program. I have the utmost respect for it. I got married again when I was a police officer. We had a daughter, and my wife got pregnant. I don't feel like a man. I still got to be validated. So I started to have an affair with my partner. No, I have a female partner now. I don't care what your preference is. Mine is female. So I'm having an affair with my female partner. She found out I got my wife pregnant. She took offense to that. She shot me. What the hell are you laughing at, dude? Jesus, you're a guy, for God's sakes, maybe. I can't believe that. And I'm going to tell you something else. All you guys in here think about dating women here in this group, check out all the women that laughed about that. Because if they have a gun and you do one thing wrong, there's a chance they may shoot you. Just think about it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying any more. She shot me in the head. That's all fun and games till you get shot, huh? Then it's just fun and games with a bullet wound. Whoever your sponsor is, she's dealing with a sick woman. I just want to mention that. But I thought rather than get gunned down in a police car, I'd resign. So I left the police department. I got a real estate license. Now, if you think money, property, and prestige will fix it for you, if you're an alcoholic of my type, money does not fix alcoholism. Money doesn't take away the rage. Money don't fix the infidelity. Money doesn't fix lying, cheating, and stealing. Money doesn't fix ruining your life and your family's life. Because I made a ton of money. I made a lot of money in real estate. I bought 2 brand new Cadillacs and paid cash for those Cadillacs. I paid cash. I bought my wife one and I bought me one. We put a house on a 1/4 acre, 3-hole putting green and a swimming pool we put in the backyard. My kids wore designer clothes. I wore custom suits and gold bracelets and diamond pinky rings and gold chains. I had a Mr. T starter kit before he was on TV. And money didn't fix it. Money didn't take away the desperation. Money didn't fix the anxiety and the rage. And at the age of 36 years old, I stood there one day and I looked around, and everything I'd worked all my life to get was gone. My wife and kids had left. The houses were gone, the car, the clothes, the jewelry. Everything I owned was in a cardboard box in the back seat of a stolen car. That's a hell of a note for a former police officer. And if you'd have walked up to me and said, Jones, alcohol stripped you of all of this, I could have given you reason after reason why it wasn't the alcohol. I needed another deal. I needed a bigger deal. I needed a younger woman. I needed a prettier woman. I needed a bigger car. I needed a bigger house. I needed a bigger diamond. I could have given you 1,000 things I needed. Alcohol ain't got nothing to do with it. Alcohol helped me deal with it. And then I ended up homeless on the streets and ended up passing blood when I went to the bathroom and I got very sick. And a woman I had worked real estate with seen me one day on the streets there in Simi Valley, and she cleaned me up and took me to a doctor. And that doctor gave me a physical. And then they let me go and I went back to doing what I do behind the sportsman's bar. And when they got the results in, she come and found me again and she took me back to that doctor and I sent in his office. And that man looked at me and he said, Mr. Jones, he says, you're addicted to alcohol the way a heroin addict is to heroin. If you don't stop drinking, you're going to die. He says, you got cirrhosis of the liver. You got a hole in your throat from vomiting all the time. He says, you got a lung and stomach infection. All the things you're going to have if you're living and eating and doing the things I'm doing. And when that man told me I was going to die before summer, what flooded over me was relief. Because I'm tired. It's not easy ruining your life and everybody's life around you. I don't care what you think. That's a lot of work. I stood up there and I shook that doctor's hand. I said, thank you. And I walked out of his office and the money they gave me to eat lunch on, I went to a liquor store and bought me a fifth of whiskey and a case of beer. And I drank as hard and as fast as I could because if alcohol was going to kill me, I wanted to die. To make a long story short, my parents found out I was dying on the streets and I wouldn't take care of myself. And my parents had me committed. They had me strapped down in this hospital and I'd have went home and talked to him about it if I could have got out of the restraints. I mean, but you ain't getting out of those things when they strap you down. You're there. And I was upset about that. I hadn't talked to my parents in almost 4 years. Who are they to put me in that hospital and have me strapped down like some kind of animal? And they pumped me full of vitamin B and magnesium to help with the withdrawals, and some of them I remember and some of them I don't. I remember some of the little things flying around the room, the wastebasket being on fire, and it wasn't. And I remember some of the cramps and some of the sweats that happened. And at the end of about 10 days, they unstrapped me to that bed. They put me in a van, and they took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't know why. I'm not an alcoholic. I had never been arrested for drunk driving. I had never been arrested for drunk in public. I used to have a lot of money and own a lot of property. I was a staff non-commissioned officer in the United States Marine Corps. I was a police officer. I'm not an alcoholic. It's the only disease in the world that will kill you eventually, and your head will say it's always something else. I walked into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was a bunch of losers in there like you. I couldn't believe my eyes. And it ain't changed in 27 years and 9 months, I'm going to tell you. You're all doing the same crap you were doing tonight. Everybody's there hugging each other, kissing and shaking hands. You know, it just made me crazy. And then all the ladies, all their hair's done nice and their makeup's on right and the guys are clean and they're wearing clean clothes. And what I did is I judged you. You see, I had contempt prior to even knowing who you were. And I looked at you and I know you couldn't possibly have lived the life I had lived looking as good as you folks look. You're all too clean and too bright and too shiny and too happy. And you trust each other. And you guys looked at me and said, Frank, get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. I thought, I'll rip your throat out. He said, no, there's too many of us. Why don't you rip a seat and shut up? Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Go to AA if you want to drink. If you want to take a drink, Frank, go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You see, I heard that over and over and over, and I hated you. And I left that meeting, and I held you in utter contempt. And they brought me back the next night. And I looked at you, and I realized I had misjudged you. You ain't made the money I had made. You didn't have the jewelry. You didn't have the clothes. You didn't have the cars or the houses, baby. I am cool. You are a bunch of losers. Look at you. You guys looked at me and said, Frank, you ain't got any of that crap now. You're homeless. Get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I heard that over and over again. And I got to tell you that if you're an alcoholic of my type, what happened to me might happen to you if you don't plug into this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't get yourself a sponsor. I did not say get somebody that will talk to you about your issues. That is such a bunch of crap. If somebody says, okay, I'll talk to you about your issues, get away from them. They're trying to kill you. Your issues will change every 5 or 6 seconds. You got an issue with me right now. Another second or two you won't have. It'll be with somebody else. Your issues will change. Show me in the big book where it says write about your issues. It ain't in there. I'm going to tell you that. It says write a fearless and thorough moral inventory, and it says make a list of people you'd harm, become willing to make amends. Fit them all. I think that's what it says. It doesn't say write about your issues or how you feel. All that does is give you the legal authority by a sponsor to be self-obsessed. How do I look? What do people think of me? How am I doing in the sex relations? And how's my job? And oh, I got a problem. You get a sponsor to get you involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous, not alcoholic and anything. Alcoholics Anonymous. Get commitments at the meetings. This is just what I was told. Get commitments. Don't come in here and suck the life out of it and leave. We have enough people sucking the life out of AA without you doing it. That's what I was told. I couldn't believe it. I hadn't even done anything yet. But what happened to me might happen to you if you don't get a higher power. If you don't start going to meetings. Sitting in the front and listening and having respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. What happened to me might happen to you. You see, I walked out of that hospital and I was as sober as I am right this minute. And I stood out there in that sun in Indiana and I started crying. And all the things I had done all my life came down and started choking me out. All the things I did in Vietnam, all the killing and burning and all the crap I did, the abuse to 2 wives and 4 kids and shoplifting and stealing from my parents and lying and ripping people off came down and is choking me out. I don't want to take a drink. I have not had a desire to take a drink of alcohol in over 27 years. I had a desire to commit suicide. Where do you go when you want to take your own life? I never heard that at a meeting. Where do you go when you have no hope? Where do you go when you look down that long black tunnel and there's no light at the end of it? I didn't hear anything about that. I didn't want to drink. I wanted to commit suicide. I had no hope. I had no faith. I had no God. I had nothing. And I went back to California and I found my wife and kids up in Oregon and I brought them back down to California. We moved into a garage, not attached to a house, just a garage, in a 6-acre field, and we slept on the floor of that garage. And we ate out of a styrofoam chest. We ate government cheese and block bologna. Run a hose over from a house down the road there, and that's how they washed. I didn't go to meetings. I haven't had a desire to take a drink. I don't go to meetings. I don't have a sponsor. I don't have a God. And at 6 months, my wife and kid says I was a lot worse then than I ever was when I was drinking. And at 6 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings, no sponsor, no God, I'm driving a stolen car on the Hollywood freeway with a 45. I'm looking for work. I have to feed my children. And a guy in front of me in the fast lane, I'm honking at him to get out of the fast lane, and he won't get out of the fast lane. And I don't know if that aggravates you here in Portland. But I'm going to tell you something. The way these ninnies out there drive make me crazy. And I'm honking and telling him to get out of the way, and he ain't getting out of the way. Now, here in Portland, you guys are probably so spiritual, you just pull around him and wave at him. Hey, dude. I didn't do that. I rear-ended the guy. And I chased him off the freeway, and when he stopped, I stopped, and I got out of the car with my 45, and I walked up to his driver's window, and I put the gun in the window, and I said, if you ever drive that slow again, I'll kill you. Now, I didn't want a bourbon and water right then. I wanted to take that man's life. That's how I get when I don't drink. That's how I get when I don't have a sponsor. That's how I get when I don't have meetings and commitments and do the things in AA I'm supposed to do. You probably won't get that way. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. At 10 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings, and the world's closing in on me, I'm standing in Alpha Beta. It used to be a grocery store in Newhall. And I'm standing there with Pepsi and cigarettes. I'm not going to buy my children milk for their cereal. I'm selfish and self-centered. I will always get mine first because I'm a selfish, self-centered individual. And I'm standing there with my Pepsi and cigarettes, and it says 10 items or less, cash only. My head said, count this woman's items. She's got 13 items in a 10-item line. Now, that probably don't aggravate you folks here in Portland. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm a thinker, and I don't know if you're a thinker or not. I got to analyze stuff. I want to know about things. I don't know about you. Is 12 eggs 12 items? Or is it just a dozen eggs? Is 4 apples in a bag, is that apples? Or is that 4 more items? Is 2 half gallons of milk, is that milk or 2 items? By the time I analyzed her stuff, she had about 30 items. And I'm upset about it. And I'm ready to launch. I'm angry. I can't back anger off. I don't know about you. When I get angry, I can't just say, oh, okay, let go, let God. I'm not supposed to swear, but I get pissed. I get angry. And I'm standing there, and I'm ready to launch, and this lady broke her checkbook out. I said, you can't write a check in this line. It says cash on the sign, lady. And she smiles. She says, I'll be through in a minute, Sonny. I said, my name ain't Sonny. I said, I'm not Sonny this minute. I said, you ain't writing a check in this line. And I took her eggs and milk. I threw that crap all over Alpha Beta. Now, it's all funny now. But 4 large sheriffs came to talk to me. They wanted to know if I was on drugs. That's how you drug addicts act. I didn't want a pina colada right then. I wanted to rip her blue wig off. I hated that old woman. Now, that won't happen to you. Don't worry about it. It's not a problem. That's how I get. 13 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings. I'm trying to interview for a job. Mike Gill walks by and he says, "Hey, Frank, how you doing?" That's a personal question. Why are you trying to pry into my private life? I said, "I'll tell you how I'm doing, but I don't want anybody in this office to hear this, dummy." And I grabbed him by the throat and I jerked him on the desk and I started choking him, saying, "How do you think I'm feeling right now?" I had a nervous breakdown. That won't happen to you. Don't worry about it. I didn't want a rum and coke right then. I wanted to rip this guy's throat out. I got to tell you how God works in my life, and I don't believe in God. I was an active member of my home group in that office that day, the only day that man had ever been in that office. They pulled my fingers off this guy's throat, and they laid a card down. They said, "I know what's wrong with you, but you got to go see this guy. I can't help you. I'm afraid of you." He took me back to the garage I lived in, and I had guns, a debt cord, and a hand grenade, and I was waiting for the war. And sent my wife and kids to his house with his wife and kids, and they sat with me for about 9 or 10 days. I don't remember those days at all. I have no recollection. They told me about them later. And then they took me to this man's office, and I sit in his office, and I just sit there and cried. And I had taken sobriety in life as far as I could take it without some kind of help. And what that man told me that day saved my life and my sanity up to and including tonight, whether you believe it or not. He said, "Frank," he says, "you haven't had a drink in 13 months. He said, "Right now," he said, "drinking ain't your problem." He said, "What you've got right this minute is a living problem." And he says, "You better find a living answer to that living problem." He said, "I suggest you try to find it in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "If you go to those meetings," he said, "there's a group of people that's already walked that path before you got there. Fall in behind them and do the things they're doing." He didn't say bring the body and the mind will follow. If somebody tells you that, that's like issues. Get away from them. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says this is an action program. It means you got to do something, people. You cannot sit. Your head is not going to follow you in anywhere, okay? I'm going to tell you that right now, especially to an AA meeting. If you ain't in here doing something and being a part of this here, your head ain't getting it. He told me to get commitments. He told me that makes me a part of the group and it helps pay back what I'm being so freely given by the others. He said, "Don't come in here and suck the life out of AA. Give something back to AA by having a commitment." He told me to come in here and he said, "Sit in the front." He said, "Keep your mouth shut and listen during the meeting." He said, "Don't get up and wander around. Everybody knows you're here and everybody knows you're a newcomer. They can tell by looking at you." He said, "Have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. You've never had respect for anything in your life. Have respect for AA because you're playing You Bet Your Life here. We have a lot of fun," and he says, "we laugh and kid and stuff, but," he said, "this disease will kill you." He says, "you need to take it seriously with all the fun you're going to have." He told me to come in here and shake hands with people in a meeting. It'll get my sick mind off my sick self. He told me to get a higher power or God, and I told him I don't believe in God. He said, "Well, how about that? Whoever hangs the moon out at night and takes it down in the morning, why don't you just pray to them?" Because he said, "I know it ain't you doing it." And so that's how I found my God. And I came into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't feel a part of it. And I tried to sit in the back. I'm going to sit there tough. And I ain't touching nobody. I ain't talking to nobody. I went to him and I said, "I don't feel a part of the group." And he said, "That's because you're not." He said, "They're not going to come to you. You have to go to them. You go and stick your hand out to those people." And I got commitments, and I was on cleanup for 7 meetings a week the first 5 years I was sober. And what I found out is the same people on cleanup had the same amount of time I had. And I got to know them, and I got to know my problems were like their problems. They were having the same things happen with them that I was having happening with me. And I started plugging into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm glad I got here when I got here because I learned about principles before personalities. You see, I don't care how you act at home or what you do away from meetings. I only see you at the meetings. I care how you act here. I care how you treat each other here because this is how I learn. You can tell me anything, but my head's as thick as my butt. I got to see it. And I've had a lot of things happen in sobriety over the 27 years. You think you get sober and everything's wonderful. No, life still happens. Bad things happen. You know those little girls, that little girl, I almost shot that dad to make amends to her. Today she's general counsel for a medical corporation in Indiana. She named my grandson after me because she loves her dad. Not because I'm a good father, I'm not a good father. But because Alcoholics Anonymous was in the home and Al-Anon was in the home. She knows about that, and so she's got a good relationship with me, and I got a good relationship with her. My middle daughter's got a master's degree, and she teaches fifth grade. And she got married 3 years ago, and I got to walk her down the aisle, and I'm still self-centered and egotistical, and I'm walking my daughter down the aisle. This little old queen leans out, and she says, "You look beautiful, darling." I leaned over and said, "Thank you." My daughter elbows me and says, "Dad, she was talking to me." I said, "I know." And I'm proud of my daughter. She's going to have a baby in November, and I'm proud of her, and I have a relationship with her. My youngest daughter graduated from college, and she was going to be a veterinarian, as some of you know, when I spoke up here before. And then when she graduated, she called. She said, "Dad, I don't want to go to school 3 or 4 more years to be a vet. I'm going to take my second choice." I said, "Yeah, Beck, what's that?" She said, "I want to be a police officer." I almost crapped a gold brick. I couldn't believe it. And I said, "All right." I said, when did you come up with that grand scheme?" And she said, "Listening to you and my godfather talk about when you were a police officer." And she said, "I just had the utmost respect for you and him." She went through LAPD Academy 32 weeks, and she finished in the top 5 in her class. She did her year probation at Rampart. I worried about her. I know what's out there on the street. I met her partner one day, and I told her partner, I said, "If I ever get called to the hospital because my daughter's injured, when I get there, you need to be injured too, even if it's self-inflicted." He looks at my daughter and he says, "Is he serious?" And she says, "Yeah, I'm afraid he is." But I love my daughter. And then my son, who was born when I was in Vietnam, he couldn't get this deal. He spent 13 years in state prison from the age of 18. And he got out the last time. And he's not an alcoholic. He's a drug addict. And he started going to N.A., and he got 5 years sober. He had a sponsor, and he was doing good. Him and his girlfriend broke up, and he went back out. I got a call from my daughter, and she said, "Dad, your son's going back to prison." I said, "Why?" She said, "LAPD tactical stopped him tonight. He had heroin and cocaine and baggies and scale and a sawed-off shotgun and ski mask and 2 handguns in his car." I love my son. But see, I can't save his life. I can't save mine. I need a sponsor. Alcoholics Anonymous isn't for the people who need it. It's for the people who want it. It's a tough lesson. I love my son. But I didn't help put him in prison, so I don't go visit him. I told him, "If you want a relationship with me, I'm out here." Therefore, he made a conscious choice to do what he did. That ended our relationship. That hurts me, but that's just how it is. Those are bad things. My dad died when I was 9 years sober. I went back and put my 9-year medallion in his pocket, and they lowered him in the ground. My dad saved my life. I love my dad because of AA. I had a relationship with him. My brother got sober in my house. I love my brother. He's a Vietnam vet. He was a police officer in Arizona. He had 17 years, 10 months. He got a rare disease, and 6 months later, he died. I love my brother. I just went to more meetings, talked to more people at meetings. 4 days later, my mom died. That's just how it is. That's life. Nothing's going to change those things. What I need to do is stay plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous. I have responsibilities here with family members that are around. I learned that here. 1985, I went to my sponsor and I said, "I think I ought to go back in the Marine Corps Reserve and make up for that year I spent in the brig." I said, "I made it up at the end of my enlistment, but I was drinking." He said, "Submit the paperwork, kid, and all he can do is say yes or no." And they took me back in the Marine Corps, and I retired in the year 2000 as Sergeant Major. Wouldn't have happened without Alcoholics Anonymous. I get a check every month that you people contribute to. Thank you. I have a good life today. At 14 years sober, I was unemployed and lost everything in sobriety. I couldn't get a job. My sponsor, "Don't let you file bankruptcy," said, "make looking for a job a job." And I did that, and I applied at Toys R Us and Mervyn's and Ralph's and Vaughn's and stock groceries. I don't care what it is, just give me something so I can have some self-worth. And I was 2.5 years, and I lost a home, car, and credit cards and good credit. I just went to meetings. And then I got in the profession I'm in today and made up the bills and got everything caught up, and life is good, and I have a good life, and I enjoy the career I'm in today, and I have a lot of fun. And then I ended a 31-year marriage in sobriety, and we didn't have some big affair or some fall to raw. What happened was, for some reason, we grew apart, and her and I sat down and talked about it. We didn't even have an attorney. I gave her everything, and I took the file cabinet of bills. She's a good woman. She raised my daughters. That's Alcoholics Anonymous now, and on. Then I was single for a while. I did date two women in AA. Then I went to work one day and I met this woman where I worked, and we started talking. I asked for a number and she wouldn't give it to me. She gave me her email address. And I said, I don't own a computer and I don't know how to work one. So I had one of the guys I sponsor email her. She got back in Louisiana working down there, and I gave her my number. She called. We went out and took her down to San Diego, and I spoke. She didn't know what AA was. Driving back to L.A., she says, did they write that down and have you say that? Did you really do those things? I said, well, I did them in a general way. Haven't set your house on fire yet. And her and I got married on 12-12-04, and Clancy gave her away because she had no male members in her family. And she loves Alcoholics Anonymous and all you people in AA, and she thinks that Clancy and Johnny and Larry Thomas and Cindy Coleman and Marianne King, she thinks they're all such nice people. And I said, no, they're not. They're not nice at all, Peg. And she said, no, they're really wonderful. And I said, no, they're not. They're not. They're very mean, and they're nasty, and they're convicts and stuff. And then she said, look at what they've done for you. I don't have an answer for that. Look at what they've done for me. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't beat it. I should never have anything like her in my life. I just, before we got married, I had a heart attack. Pretty bad one. The group's all sad I didn't die. And they did the surgery and they put the stents in all my arteries and things they're supposed to do. I didn't let them put me out because I wanted to watch. And I did, and then I'm sitting in the cardiologist's office. And I'm not going to offend anybody in here. I'm just going to tell you what happened to me. That's all. Take it or leave it, folks. Don't get mad at me over it. He sat there, and he said, I'm going to prescribe a glass of red wine for you every night before you go to sleep. I looked at him. My eyes lit up like slot machines. And my wife, who's not married to me yet, says, I'll get two of the best cases of red wine they make, babe. And I said, when you do, put them on the porch. She said, why? I said, so when you throw my ass out, I can take them with me. If I drink that glass of red wine every night, it's doctor prescription. Am I sober? Stumped some of you, didn't it? I'm not saying nothing. But I hear so many people today, it's taken so many things because it's a doctor's prescription. I drink Welsh's grape juice before I go to bed at night. For all my other anomalies, depression, anxiety, nervousness, rage, I use a higher power, a sponsor, the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in my home group. You can't tell me if AA works or not if you're on something. That's just my opinion, and I have the right to it, just like you have the right to take it. So don't come up and talk to me about it after the meeting. I don't want to hear it. If you have the right to do that or say anything you want to, why shouldn't I have the right to have my opinion? I fought for it. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sober, 27 years, 9 months plus. I have a good life. I have a good life not because of what I drive, not because of the house I live in, not because of the beautiful woman that's 16 years younger than me that I'm married to, not because of the money in my pocket. I have a good life because when I leave these rooms, I have a quiet head and a calm stomach. And when I lay down tonight to go to sleep, I'll be asleep in less than 10 or 15 seconds. I don't lay there and think about stuff. Alcoholics Anonymous has done that for me. It's given me a God. It's given me a fellowship. that's given me everything I've got in my life today. I have the utmost respect for AA and the people that are sober in it. If you're new or used tonight, you don't have to remember anything I've said, because it doesn't mean anything to anybody in here. My story don't mean nothing to anybody in here. I need to remember what I used to be like, what happened, and what my life is like today. I'm a very lucky man. You see, I found out what macho is in AA. Macho is driving a car with a driver's license. It's having car insurance. It's getting to meetings early and staying late for the newcomers. It's not having to validate yourself with another woman when you're in a relationship or you're married. It's having a job that pays you a paycheck, not some scam. I found out that's what macho is here in AA. It's being honest in all your affairs, whether you like it or not. So if you're new or used tonight, I think the only thing you should remember was probably read to you tonight. Probably didn't even think about it when it was read. But it's, to me, it's the most important line in the big book. Because I watch you old-timers. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thank you.